episode of Hustle is brought to you by Design Inc., the best place to find creative talent. Need help with a project? Post it on Design Inc. and receive free proposals from the best designers, illustrators, and animators. Join the hundreds of companies and startups that have been connected with the perfect creative for their project. Go to designinc.com/hustle and start your project today.
Welcome to season 4 of the Hustle Podcast. It's been 2 months since we've been in the recording booth, but we got a great season lined up. We got some great new sponsors, and I'm really excited to be back at it. Today is a big one for me. I'm here with one of my heroes, Mike Buzzard, someone that I've never met face-to-face, but he knows one of my cousins and a couple of my friends. For those of you that don't know who Mike Buzzard is, he was one of the first web designers and developers that I knew about when I was starting my career in the 90s. Pretty much, in my mind, integral to establishing, you know, design community back in the 90s through his involvement with sites like K10K and News Today. Built a company called the Cuban Council, which was also very inspirational to me and a lot of people. He's been doing a ton of work with Huff Worldwide for years. And for the last several years, he's been a design manager at Google, building design culture, connecting the dots, and helping make Google a more design-oriented company. Thanks for making time, Michael. How are you doing, and what the hell have you been up to?
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is an honor to be a part of this. I've been listening for a while. What I've been up to, more of the last of what you were talking about, focusing on improving the design culture and sort of continuing to build on the ever-evolving design culture within Google, and then how that works with the larger design community.
So why don't you say a little bit about about your group at Google and the kinds of things that that you've been doing on recruiting and education and some of those areas.
Yeah, so when I joined about 4.5 years ago, I was asked to create my own role, being a self-taught developer, coming up through the design community, building a business. I'm neither, by Google standards, an engineer, a designer, or a product manager. So I was a bit on my own. I started with a focus on talent for the team that I was on. So that involved scouting, recruiting, acquisitions, just to help bolster up the different disciplines and help Google understand and appreciate how those disciplines could be applied and sequenced on product. Fast forward a little bit, that led me more on the community side, where we weren't doing much in the way of participating with the online or physical design community at large. And that's a lot of my background. So I started reaching out to people that I'd known over the years, just figuring out, you know, how can we get involved? How can we contribute and participate? That led further upstream to college and university. So I was looking at what is Google doing on campus as it relates to design, what message are we sending, what expectations are we setting, which even led further to helping to shape the first of its kind so undergraduate digital product design curriculum with Savannah College of Art and Design that we launched last year in the fall. So one thing has led to the other, but it's been a lot of back and forth between internal and external culture and community engagement.
Yeah, I think that seems to be, from an outside perspective, a common thread with you in your involvement in culture and education. Before we move on and talk more about Google and what you have going on in the future, I think it's important to look back at the past a little bit. So from what I understand, you started getting into this industry back in 1996. Tell me a little. Let's talk a little bit about how you got into this field. How you learned to, you know, design digital things and build digital things, and what sort of inspired you to point yourself in that direction professionally.
Yeah, so my dad had three careers. He started as an industrial engineer, and then in the early mid 80s bought a IBM PC and taught himself programming, where he'd later have a consultancy. So I grew up with computers and was always comfortable with the command line interface, which, looking back, was very fortunate. And then I was doing a lot of networking and hardware repair in the mid-90s, after having dropped out of high school in 10th grade. And then somehow through that, I came across sort of creative outlets online. So somebody showed me, I think, Frontpage, which was, at the time, was paired with or packaged with Image Composer. And you know, having grown up, everybody's got the same story of growing up drawing and sketching and finding a creative outlet. And I connected those two things and just fell in love. And I started building a site for my dad's consultancy. And then as soon as I build it, just like Legos, tear it down, build it again, tear it down, build it again, I got tired of the speed of those cycles and started learning more about the server side. So how can I handle forms? How can I make it more sophisticated and complex? And I'm a pretty bad visual designer. I have a hard time connecting what I see in my head with what I see on a screen or in real life. And when I found code, this was an opportunity to do something creative that didn't have those same disconnects. And so to me, it was just an endless opportunity to explore. And I just dove in and didn't stop.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I mean, for me, like when I was in 1996, I was graduating high school and getting into the field, and I was trying to find a way to merge my interest with computers, with art, and I started learning like lingo stuff. And around that time, let's say maybe 1997 or 1998, I remember, you know, we were building our portfolio, and we were supposed to use these tools that we were learning at school, like Authorware and Director. And somewhere along those lines, you know, I stumbled across a few websites, Digital Web Magazine and K10K, and a few of these like early design communities. And I think for me, that's when it sort of changed for me, and I sort of really could see how these two things really work together. I felt like I was hacking at the time because I didn't know much about design. I also didn't know much about code, but it was amazing to see that these communities of people that were making these things, curating great design inspiration, putting it out there, and you had a lot to do with that. I mean, I can't think of anyone my age that you know, doesn't know the News Today sound or remember K10K or remember visiting these sites daily. What was it like to work on those products, and what could you say to the people out there that may not remember those two communities?
Wow, yeah. Well, I guess my involvement with each of them was different, but you know, K10K was the first one that I found, the first sort of inspiration portal of the time that really just completely opened up my imagination. At the time, I was writing code and exploring and tinkering and just figuring out what I could do. And then through Speared Peanut, which was an agency based in Houston, whose founders I'm still friends with today. I've had odd ties over the years, but still stayed good friends. But through them is where I found K10K. And when I found K10K and what they were doing with code, what M. Schmidt was doing with code, and the sort of super tight pixel layout and composition that Toka was crafting on the visual side, I was just endlessly inspired. And so I was doing a lot of tinkering on my own and sharing snippets with M. Schmidt, and we'd go back and forth just kind of nerding out on that stuff. And over the years, we'd collaborate on a few projects here and there. I was hungry to partner with anybody who was designing things that I thought were awesome, and then they needed to automate them or put tools behind them or simplify the content, whatever it might have been. So I think the first thing that I built in the design community was a news box for Design is Kinky. The guys Murray and Andrew out of Sydney, who, again, I still collaborate with today. So I built that, and that built a little bit of credibility. And then I was doing some things on the side with Michael and Toka and those guys. And then Jason Christopher and Folkert Gorder had this idea. They were working together at agency.com in New York. They wanted to create a portal where it wasn't just, so at the time they'd have these pseudo celebrity design folks around the world that would contribute content for inspiration. And it was very curated. And so News Today, the idea was that there would be a curated column similar to that. And then there would be one that's open to the public for just sharing inspiration and posts. And then there would be a forum, and they wanted to build this. And I had extra time on my hands. I'd moved to San Francisco. I was learning some new languages. And through Greg Huntoon, who was at Media Temple at the time, we got connected and just started building it. So we built News Today and launched it. It was the first PHP MySQL thing I had done. We had some bugs and some performance issues. I looked at the book that I had for PHP at the time, found Chris Lay, who was based in LA, just cold called him he seemed like an expert on the platform at the time, and got him involved to help optimize a little bit. And then he and I continued to build News Today for a number of years, a couple different iterations.
Do you want to sing the News Today jingle?
No.
Man, but you know, like, I just can't thank you enough for, and all of you guys for this, the stuff that you did. I mean, I think it really helped people figure out that there were a lot of people interested in doing this, and that there was places to learn. And I miss those days too. Like, man, I miss the tiny little pixel fonts, and you know, the kind of compositions that people were doing on the web, like pieces of art. You know, like things where every website was extremely different, and everything was you know, it was a puzzle to build things back then and make things work. And I was actually talking to my friend Greg Story about this. I actually talked to him a lot about this. He was saying that what we really need is a digital design museum, like a physical museum somewhere where all of this stuff is on display, and you can kind of go through things over the years. It seems like an interesting concept. There's the museum in DC. I wonder if anyone is thinking about capturing the 90s and the early 2000s and letting other people experience it. I mean, do you think that a lot is any of the old K&K or News Today stuff available online anymore?
I mean, outside of the Internet Archive, I'm not sure. I mean, I still have source code and could probably spin something up. But as far as I know, I mean, fully functioning sites or features I don't think are available. And I don't know how they would render in today's browsers. They're so much more sophisticated. It'd probably render better on a phone than in a browser just because of the size.
Yeah, those are the days, man. I just remember how satisfying it was to come up with a design that worked, because you know, nothing was templatized. There weren't a lot of best practices in figuring out something. Oh, I don't know what it is. Maybe nostalgic, but I felt so much better when I figured something out. Back then, it was just harder.
Yeah, we built our own. We learned. You know, not many people, if any, had a computer science background on the creative community side, so we were learning a lot of these concepts on our own to build out our own libraries of reusable code and how to deal with performance issues. I mean, there were a lot of hacks in place, and scaling platforms was not simply a single command line entry as it is today.
Yeah, totally, for sure, man. And so, okay, so all these years of building these, being involved in the creative community and building these tools, you know, a long freelance career, you get really busy, you decide to start an agency with your friends. What's the Cuban Council story?
Right. Yeah. So Michael had moved to San Francisco. We were collaborating on a few projects together here and there. I think there was a small record label in the UK was one of them. And freelancing, the first client that I really fell in love with that was a brand that I'd grown up on and just looked up to was Epitaph Records. So the founder owner of the label had come across my name on News Today. He had a design background and is sort of a tech nerd. And he reached out. So I was doing that work, and I brought Michael in to help with the admin UI. And it just was a really fluid working relationship. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of back and forth. You forgot this or overlooked this. I mean, every little detail was covered, and we both appreciated that in each other's work. Toka was in London at the time, uncertain about what he wanted to do next. I think he was in Oven Digital. And so we talked him into coming to San Francisco to start Cuban Council. And then it was that same fluidity that Michael and I had in trading the work back and forth, but now with this visual UI concept brand creative side. So we had the end to end, we could sit down with a client and really do what we thought was the highest level of visual design paired with the highest and most detailed level of production design and front end development, and then really customized tools to give us that creative design flexibility. So it was, for us, it was the perfect formula.
So what year did you start that business, Cuban Council?
So there was a little bit of a transition period because Michael was in San Francisco and he was freelancing. I was freelancing and we were bringing Toka over. And you know, at this time, you didn't just go out to and grab investors for your tech design startup. And and get a fancy office. So we started by freelancing physically closer together and then coming up with a model to pool money to where we just over time transitioned to operating as a single entity from individuals. And we had rented or subletted a little space in the Future Farmers office at 7th and Howard in San Francisco, which already had a great design background from Atlas Magazine and Future Farmers. And so that's where we formally started in 2003.
Yeah. Wow. So how awesome was it to work with, with Brett from Bad Religion and Epitaph Records? That's so jealous, personally. That must have been awesome.
Great. He's become a really good friend over the years. And so I think the starstruck thing faded years ago for me, but I had to walk in. I think the email he sent to me was, "I'm a huge fan of your work and I'm curious if you'd be interested in working on my label." And he provided some background to the label. And I had just woken up. I was cutting through LA on my way from San Diego to San Francisco. And I responded, said, "Sure, yeah, here's my number." And I didn't know what to think of it. I was still foggy. And 30 seconds later, the phone rings. So I went over there and I just acted cool. I was like, "Oh yeah, I think I've heard of your label or band." But it's great. Brett is probably one of the best producers, and it probably comes from his decades of experience in music production. There are a lot of similarities that I've observed having gone to the studio with him a few times. But he's an outstanding creative producer. Like, he gets very involved in the projects. His feedback is outstanding. He understands how to balance the business needs and goals with the user needs and goals, and then leaves room for the creative side of it. He's not like a pixel director or anything. He's outstanding to work with.
Well, that's awesome. So at its height, what was the size of Cuban Council, and did you guys... I'm asking a few questions out of personal interest because I don't know the whole full story. But were you guys always fully located in California, or did you have East Coast studio as well?
We spread out a bit. So I guess it's important to note that it was very much a lifestyle company, right? We started the company with this passion to make things the way we thought they should be made, and we also did it to do it like in a process that we thought made sense and in a lifestyle sort of flexibility that made sense, and that really was visible when I think mid-2000s Toca moved to New York. He just wanted to head over and live in New York for a while, and we said fine. And he said, after a few months, "I'm getting tired of working out of this small room in my apartment." And we said, "We'll get an office." And then he said, "Well, I'm tired of working alone." And then we said, "Well, then hire a designer." And we just kind of grew and evolved in that way, just very circumstantial. And then eventually we opened a Portland office as we had a developer who moved up there, and we hired a few folks there. I think at the largest, I'd say we went through three main stages. The first stage of Cuban Council, maybe the first 3 or 4 years, was building a portfolio and really refining how we worked. And then the middle stage was figuring out how we would grow. I think at one point we just took a ton of work from Google, maybe a few others, and we were, I think, managing 20 some contractors at once, and the core team was maybe 8 people. So the day-to-day was 30 folks, but we were only 8 full-time, but we were afraid of assuming the risk of taking on full-time folks if we weren't sure we could commit to them. And then one day we realized, we're no longer doing the thing that we set out to do and the thing that we love. We're just doing a lot of project management. And so we started to get much more strategic about how we ran the business. We'd have annual summits. We'd spend days looking over the previous year's goals and strategy and what worked and what didn't work and why, and then make plans for the next year. And we did that religiously. And so the last stage was really optimizing the company. And at that point, I think when we wound it down, we were about 15 people in those 3 offices. And then M. Schmidt was living in Illinois and just working from home out there. So 4 locations, I guess, is for tax purposes, but
yeah,
3 different offices.
So if you don't mind me asking, what was the deciding factor? What made you guys decide to kill the baby?
Yeah, I mean, we were all getting older, having families. And again, I said we optimized the company. It was very, very healthy at the time. But we were, every once in a while we'd say, okay, we're going to work on our own thing, our own project. And we would got to the point where we'd treat it like a project. We'd build a schedule. We'd assign resources. We're about to dig in. And then Francis Coppola calls. And we're like, well, shit, we have to take that call. And so you know, how often do you get the opportunity to work with somebody like that? And so we would do it. And then next time around, we'd gear up and get ready to dive in. And then like Tom Waits would call or get connected. And that just kept getting in the way of us exploring other ideas and opportunities. And then after a while, the Tom Waits's and the Francis Coppola's didn't have the same allure that they did earlier. And so not that we didn't appreciate all of our clients, all the challenges, all the projects, but it wasn't, the excitement was dulling a little bit. And again, it was a healthy company. We were doing fine, but we were thinking longer term. If we want to provide really great futures for our staff, we probably need to bring everybody back together physically and think about how we optimize and grow the company to a larger scale. And we just thought that that was going against what the core cultural values were from the beginning. At that time, design was becoming ever more popular in the startup world, in the tech world. There was a lot of interest from different companies. We explored a number of opportunities, which was a great educational experience. We'd worked with Google for many years. They came along and said, you know, we want to expand and diversify our design disciplines across the company, and we're a little behind. And so that was an opportunity for us to just put it all on a shelf rather than undoing or mutating, you know, what we had created, and then go on to explore these new challenges and, you know, some new growth opportunities for us.
Yeah. But were you guys, how well do you think you did at adjusting to the way, you know, the market demands, like going from doing websites to doing, you know, software and mobile design and all of that? Were you guys able to make some of those transitions in those years fairly easily? I ask because, you know, I think we're hitting another inflection point right now with, you know, AR and all, you know, and AI and these different mediums that are coming up on the horizon, where, you know, as an agency owner myself, I'm trying to figure out, okay, well, what do I do now? You know, like, do I stick with this, these core disciplines, or do I need to be on the bleeding edge? And as you know, as things become commoditized, it's hard to make the same margins on a website or a mobile app these days. People want the bleeding edge stuff.
Yeah, I don't know that we looked at the services that we were focusing on or honing or refining based on market demand. I think we looked at what we loved building, and you know, our split as far as disciplines was always about 60-40 creative and technical, and we built most of what we designed, and a lot of times that would stay online for 4 or 5 years, and we were pretty proud of how durable a lot of the things that we created were, especially when they were backed by some sort of content tool or something like that. So we had a lot of experience building software. It wasn't the same scale, but we still believed in the same values of performance and durability and robustness and all of these things. So moving into an environment like Google, again, it was much larger scale, much more sophisticated, but we understood the process. And again, we had the similar language, and then we had similar values. So I think most importantly, it's people working with people, right? I tell people this all the time. You go to a giant corporation like Google, it doesn't mean you're moving sheet metal down an assembly line. It's still people working with people to align what they think makes a great product. And so you just have to figure out how to communicate based on, you know, differences in vocabulary or background or something like that. So I don't think the transition was difficult in that way. I think we lost a little more control. At Cuban Council, people would come to us because they really wanted exactly what they'd seen us do in the past. So we tend to have a little bit more control, and you had to learn the give and take and how to communicate on a different level, because everybody was an equal stakeholder at that time, or ideally that's the case. So I think it was more, you know, maybe workflow, communication, culture stuff, but it wasn't unfamiliar.
Yeah. So the, you know, you guys worked closely together on all the, you know, K10K and News Today stuff, and the company was born out of this desire for collaboration, and it seems like the opportunity at Google was aligned with that. And then, and it seems like collaboration, we talked about this a little bit earlier, is really important to you. What, tell me what you think about when you think about collaboration, and how do you think people need to work together to accomplish solutions that make a difference?
Yeah, I mean, for anything to work out, anything like even from our joining Google is a perspective of value. That's why that worked, right? And when, you know, Michael and I started collaborating together, there was a perspective of value. I valued what he did, and he valued that I listened to that and the things that I made. And so I think it's hugely important to understand what you're capable of contributing and being surprised with the outcome when you partner with somebody that brings a different aspect to it. To me, that's been the most rewarding thing in my career in so many surprising ways. It's not just when I'm crafting something or we're building something, but physical or building a digital product or something like that. Even if we're shaping a culture or changing a workflow or a process or something, when you collaborate with other people and get their input and perspective, it can be extraordinary. And that's what gets me out of bed every day.
Yeah. Same here. Because I didn't, my company was started because I did an acqui-hire myself from my former agency to Evernote. And I realized that I loved product, but I really loved client services. So I started freelancing again. But really, I didn't like working alone. I started going down the path of building this company mainly for the collaboration. I got my wife, had a missing piece of the skill puzzle that I had. And we started building this company in the early days. We were seeing some like really good margins and all that. But most of our investment has been into various forms of collaboration just because that's what makes it exciting to go to work. I mean, for a services business, you can't just have an overwhelming amount of people because of the cost. But we've intentionally made some decisions to spend and reduce those margins to make sure that we get to work on cool things with people and go through that experience working together. It's not for me, and maybe you agree, but it's not just about the thing that you made, but the experience that you had making that.
Yeah, and you're learning all the time too, right? So we learned a ton in building sites and whatever we would tinker with. But then, when we took a move to New York, as I mentioned, this we hired a designer, and then we hired a project manager who grew to become a partner, and so she became my day-to-day partner on the business side, and we were learning so much from each other in running the business, maybe taking a similar approach that we might take to design our software and how we structured certain processes. But then like this whole world of how do we build a great business and optimize a great business for its employees. Like even the collaboration there, when it's removed from the creative side, can still have creative aspects. And that was a lot of fun too.
I mean, and apologies, speaking of Google Voice was ringing me while you were talking. Hopefully it doesn't screw us up. I don't think so, but I just want to.
So Google Voice undid the mute on your phone, and yeah, so it could be loud.
Yeah. Yeah. So what does collaboration look like at Google? Like what do teams look like at Google? I mean, I'm sure they gotta be all different, but is there a way that you guys think about that? Like the way that the right sort of team size or structure or skill sets that you guys look for, put together pods? I mean, and how do you guys build design teams there?
I think when you're working on a single problem, too large is dysfunctional no matter what it is, right? So everything breaks down into smaller, more higher functioning working groups depending on what problem they're trying to solve. And so a lot of the problems that I'm working on, and like I said, are culture and community related. It could be changing programs or processes of the past, thinking about new ways to do things that we might not already be doing. And so I work with all kinds of people, from legal and HR to corporate development to design leadership, and then people on the outside. So I manage a lot of partnerships in the design agency world, as there are project needs for different products and teams. So it's all over the place. And that's one of the things I love too, is the variety of it. One day I could go and sit down and work with recruiting and staffing and some design leadership folks. And then in the afternoon, I could be talking with a bunch of agency owners, trying to understand how their capabilities have changed or their offering or what they're looking to do in the next year or so. And so I just get a really broad, but with 20 years of experience, can still go deep in each discussion through palette of things every day. So to me, that's really interesting. It makes every day very unique and different.
So you got to design your own role, basically. And do you have your own team, or are you all over the place?
Yes and yes. Yeah, so when I came in, like I said, I didn't fit any standard mold. So they asked me to create a role. And even up to the end of the days at Cuban Council, I was still writing code 20% of my time, roughly. And so joining Google, I wasn't making anything. I think that was maybe one of the toughest things. So what I needed to do is make a structure or framework to understand how what I was doing was being bucketed and providing value or part of a larger effort. And so it started with talent scouting, recruiting, I was just like I mentioned, and community stuff. And so they became the pillars as tenets of what shaped my role. So it was talent, culture, community, and partnerships. And then more recently, as the UX teams have continued to grow, so it's a decentralized model. Each product area has a UX team. This is quite a large population of people in UX that include researchers, designers, writers, managers, all kinds of different roles. And so now I'm part of a horizontal team with two other people, and it's called UX Community and Culture. And we have a number of OKRs, right, objectives and key results for things that we're working on to try to constantly improve and grow and evolve the community and culture inside and outside of Google as it relates to Google.
Well, that's really cool. I mean, what is the most exciting thing about working at Google, and what's the biggest challenge?
I would say the most exciting thing is the people. You probably maybe hear that a lot if you talk to folks at Google, but it's just one of those places where you'll rarely ever hear or see somebody, you know, that's too busy to help. Like everybody is. Everybody wants to help further each other's mission in a lot of ways, and they want to contribute. Everybody gets everybody in general gets a lot of satisfaction out of a sense of purpose. And whether it's very small, like, yeah, I have an idea, or I can contribute to that, or I can help connect you to the person for that. Or it's a larger contribution. Sure, I can carve out a couple of weeks to write some code to help build this thing or whatever it might be. The answer is oftentimes yes. So it's difficult. A lot of people can get oversubscribed, so it can be tough to prioritize and what you say yes to, but I think in general the people is the best thing. I think, let's see, the hardest thing. I mean, the hardest thing could also be the people, right? It's a really large company. Everybody has strong, very well founded ideas and opinions about things, and that's where this sort of respecting other people's perspective and understanding how that overlaps or aligns with what your agenda might be and their agenda, and figuring out how to work together. I mean, that's to me it's fun because there's no standard formula for it. It really is a people component.
That's awesome. Well, before I took you back in history, you were talking about this this new program at Savannah College of Art and Design, or what was the school that you said that you did that at?
Yeah, SCAD, Savannah College of Art and Design.
Yeah. Tell me about that, because I mean that sounds awesome, and I think that, I don't know if their program is available, but if it is, I mean, I think it would be, I'd love to check it out.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's publicly marketed and available on their site. I think it's scad.edu, and one of the program offerings is, I believe that it's titled UX Design in there. It's for the digital product design 4-year BA. That people can enroll in for. So it started, I was just doing a lot of visits to different schools and universities, schools like RISD and School of Visual Arts in New York and NYU's ITP and CMU, and they're all over the place, and just looking at the different offerings. And there's some fantastic programs around HCI and communication design and graphic and all the things that we all know. But when I got to Savannah, they also have a broad spectrum of design discipline offerings. And I was just seeing the right courses just in the wrong stack, not for what they were trying to deliver, but if they wanted to cater to like where a great demand is in industry now, which is digital product design. So I started a conversation with them. They were very open-minded and eager to see, you know, what does this look like? What does a curriculum look like for that type of role? And so we started with just rearranging a number of the courses that they had and then highlighting some of the blanks to fill in. And we just went back and forth and iterated on it pretty quickly till we came up with what looked like a great program. And so It launched a little over a year ago. I think there's about 40 students enrolled so far, which has been a pretty good growth. I think originally it was maybe 16, so there's a lot of enthusiasm around it. And we continue to stay involved in steering in a few projects that we sponsored and led to help make sure that we're having some influence on process and some aspects of discipline that they might continue to evolve over time.
That's awesome. Well, I have a few questions for you, and then we can, you've donated a lot of your time. I want to be mindful of that, but I do want to ask a few questions that a couple of listeners have asked me to ask you, if that's okay.
Sure.
Greg's story wants to know if you miss running an agency.
People ask me, so I moved out to the suburbs out of San Francisco 7 years ago or so, and people ask me if I miss living in San Francisco, and I say I miss living in San Francisco in my 30s. So there was a time and place for Cuban Council, and it'll always be a very special thing for me, but at the same time, I'm also still kind of running an agency. You know, the team I'm on now was founded on the role that I created, and we are a horizontal entity across Google trying to influence design culture. So it very much is like an agency. I have different projects. I have different clients or stakeholders. The collaborators change, you know, so in a lot of ways it's the same. I mean, it's an extension of who I am or who I was, which is how Cuban Council came about and how this new role came about. So the answer is sort of.
Well, plus you have a unique position because you get to work with a variety of teams and a lot of different initiatives. It's not like you're on Google Mail 24 hours a day, you know, for years. You get to impact a lot of different teams.
And I have no deliverables or direct reports, which is kind of funny. But that doesn't mean I'm not doing work. I still am very involved in the agency world. So Sean Peterson was a creative director at Instrument and Cinco and a number of other places. Sean and I have a great friendship. About a year and a half ago, we had this idea of what's going on in Salt Lake City? Why are there these small agencies doing great brand appropriate visual with prototyping and sort of lightweight builds? It's just outstanding work coming out. So we reached out to some of them and we went out there and hosted a roundtable. And we sat down with, about 8 or 10 agency owners. Rally was one of them.
Ben Klein's an awesome friend of mine.
Yeah. So Ben was there and, Anthony came from Underbelly and
Underbelly. Yeah.
A handful of others. And Sean and I both have a passion for education and for community and feel a great sense of responsibility to give back because of how much we've gotten out of it. And so we sat down and we started with 4 anchoring questions just to kick off conversation throughout the day. And it was all day long. I think we had an Airbnb. We even had lunch catered. Anthony did an incredible job of making it a special event. And it was just a knowledge share. We just, when we were starting running Cuban Council, I would go to friends who had started companies in the Bay Area. So like Otopod was one, KDM was another, and we would just share information. I would pick their brains like, well, we got to get health insurance. What do we do? And this was before, Zenefits and all these services that just packaged everything up for you. You had to do it on our own. Like, who's your lawyer and do you like them and what do they do for you? And so it was all knowledge share, and I got so much out of that. And then I thought, like, in Salt Lake City, there's a small community. What is the base of the community, and how are they sharing? What are the problems that they're all facing? How are they solving it collectively versus, what could they be trading off that's not competitive? They're not really revealing trade secrets. They're just, like, helping each other within a community. And so it was really great. And then we did it again in Omaha. So we had grain and mortar folks host that. They're outstanding. And then we did it most recently in Charleston, where the Fuzzco folks hosted it. And then starting with Omaha, we would bring outsiders. So we brought Matt Falk from Basic. We had great input out of the San Diego area. And we brought James Hobbs from Octopus. And these people were just really passionate and hungry for the knowledge share component. And Fuzzco was outstanding, again, at hosting in Charleston. And that one, just something about the mix of people in the room, whatever, but the community from that has persisted on Slack to the point where people are dealing with hard problems in their businesses or challenges. And it's a community first kind of thing. People are kicking around ideas of how to solve the problem, or they're sharing resources. And it's been really rewarding for me. So I'm still very involved in the agency world. It's just in a different type of role.
Yeah, that's awesome. It sounds like what you guys are doing in those towns is really fantastic. If you find yourself thinking about making a trip to Austin, you got to let me know.
And if you know, and Sean and I are actually talking right after this to think about what we want to do in 2017, or which city to go to. I mean, what we've seen is New York, San Francisco, LA, Portland. These cities have strong design communities already. And we're not trying to change that, or we're trying to bring communities together where they're just not happening on their own, and then and create the knowledge here. So we've been calling second cities. Austin has a strong design community, so I don't know what our next second city might be, but yeah,
that makes sense. And also, I mean, I don't know if this interests you, but if it wasn't for groups like the Bureau of Digital Affairs, I don't know how Natalie and I would have navigated a lot of decisions in our earlier years of having our business. I don't know if you know about this, Mike, but the Bureau is started by Greg and Greg from Happy Cog, and they do an event called Owner Summit, which is it's usually like 15 or 20 design owners maximum at a time in a roundtable format, just talking about, like, you know, all the heartaches and win in celebrations of running a business. And then they have the Digital Product Management Summit, Creative Director Camp, and Operations Camp. And they've just built these like gigantic communities now on Slack, where it's easy to, like, the things you're talking about, oh, we got to do like a, I need training for an apprentice program. Like, what's working, right? And then you get like several people to respond. It's just awesome to see that happening.
I wasn't familiar with it, but it's ours, funny enough, is called Roundtable, but it hasn't been packaged or marketed. But, and it's not, yeah, again, like we're talking about what we would do next with it, but I'd love to learn more about that. I mean, if there's a way to contribute to that group, it sounds like it'd be fantastic.
Oh, yeah, I'll need to connect you with Carl then. Carl is spearheading it. He used to be the CEO of Engine Network. Engine, do you remember?
Yeah,
Engine?
I know Carl. Carl Smith, yeah. The owner camp.
Yep, that's it. Okay, so a couple more. Joel Buchemann. Joel used to work at Google, and now he's at Design Inc., this season sponsor of the Hustle podcast. And Joel asks, what's the biggest obstacle you see for design leaders to be successful and influential in tech companies?
The biggest obstacle? I mean, sad as it is, I think in a lot of ways it's themselves. I think designers tend to be extremely introspective and thoughtful, and asking, you know, questions about everything on a more maybe human level, and they can get in their way a lot of times. You know, there's an uncertainty, a lack of confidence in the subjectivity of design, and how do they come up with a way to articulate their point of view, a way that resonates with the audience they're trying to talk to, whether they're trying to get across something that they feel is brand appropriate. Well, how do you make it certain for others to understand that it's brand appropriate? So a lot of it is communication, but I think before being able to deliver a convincing argument, they have to take, there has to be a level of confidence around it themselves. And so, I mean, at Google, a lot of this is done through data, right? Like, work with a researcher, collect the data, make the case. It's harder to argue. And so data is not always the way to do it, but you need to figure out how to package and deliver the message that's convincing and compelling, and stop with the sort of self-doubt and self-questioning of your own decisions, right? There's a great deal of talent that these designers have. They have an eye for things that this is natural to them. It was kind of funny. When we worked on the Facebook logo stuff early on, Mark Zuckerberg came in the office and he was...
I forgot that you did that. That's so awesome, by the way. Well, sorry to interrupt.
This does relate. It's not just for the name dropping or whatever, but this does relate. So Sean had to take a phone call, and I'm sitting there with Mark. It was two of us. It was kind of awkward. He was like 19 and a half at the time. He says, what do you guys do here? And I said, well, what do you mean? He says, well, what do you do? And I said, we do design and development. And he's like, well, what do you mean? And I didn't know if he was testing me or if he was truly just probing, like, what does that mean? And so I pulled up Facebook, or the Facebook at the time, which he had designed and built. And I said, well, why did you why did you make this blue? And he said, well, because I'm colorblind. And I was like, shit, okay, well, why did you put this horizontal rule here and provide the spacing that you did around it? He goes, because it seemed right. And I said, well, I think on the design side, what we're doing is what seems right to most people most of the time. I didn't know how to better explain it in the way that he was framing his questions, but I think the designers need to trust in that, right? They need to trust a lot of times that they do focus on these details that other people don't, and they need to believe in the fact that they're doing what is right for most people most of the time. And then you can test it and get data to support it, but you got to take confidence in that, and you got to be able to deliver that confidence when you deliver the work or the rationale behind it. And I think designers having getting the obstacle they need to get around is in a lot of ways that sort of lack of confidence or lack of packaging and delivery in what they're confident about.
Wow, what an awesome story. And that's really great advice. That's awesome. And then the last question I'll ask you, Mike, is question for me. What's next for you? Like, what do you hope to do this year?
Well, now that I have this team that I'm working with, we have very sort of clear objectives and key results, like I said, related to the community and culture stuff. But I also just want to see continue to see the positive impact that I have. I love matchmaking design problems with great designers. So on the partnership side, I love it when people inside of Google or even outside of Google come to me. And, there's still, I left the Cuban Council site up for a couple of reasons, but there's still inbound projects. So we've been shut down for 4.5 years and it's dwindled now to maybe one project every 2 weeks or something like that. But, and I still field the emails and I try to matchmake them because I want to see somebody who understands and appreciates what they think they need in design with not just the right capabilities, but the right chemistry. So like, who's the shop that's going to be able to do that to where and really understand how this person is articulating what their needs are, and they're going to do something great. So for me, it's continuing to just kind of give back in that way. Again, I like the matchmaking. I love the work that we're doing in education. I love seeing students, again, that comes back to the confidence thing, when they're sitting in cross-functional collaborative groups working on a prompt that we give them, using some process and tools that we teach them, and you can just see the lights coming on. And when you see each of them contributing in their own way and recognizing each other for doing that, like, that's hugely rewarding. Like, they go from an optimism about, I'm going to have a career in design, I don't necessarily know what that means, to 10 weeks later or something, having a much clearer idea of how they can apply their skills in a certain environment. And I don't know how to articulate the sense of purpose and satisfaction that comes from that, but it means a great deal to me. So I just want to continue to evolve the things that I've been fortunate enough to receive myself in my career and sort of spread that out to others.
That's awesome. Well, you've done a lot for the community, and Google is doing some awesome things, I'm sure, and having a blast. And I have to say, thank you for the things you did, because I'm not quite sure I would have turned out the same way if some of the things you guys were making weren't available to me when at the right time at the right place. And I also really appreciate you taking time out of your very busy day to come on the podcast and have a conversation with me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for inviting me. I mean, I think what you're doing with Hustle is outstanding. I've probably listened to the last dozen episodes or so, and they're all unique and great. And I definitely value and appreciate it. So thank you, Anthony.
Oh, yeah, no problem. So one of these days we got to hang out. I mean, you know my cousin Mark Armendariz and my friend Christian Rochambeau used to work with you. They all say great things about you. I hope I get to meet you in person sometime.
So I gave him the nickname Rochambeau.
What? okay, yeah. So I have to know the background on that then.
I don't know. I tend to nickname people. I don't know how or why, but and Brocia, it just made sense. We were working on a project together. He was working at, what was Tom Dolan's studio, Polychrome. So yeah. He was working at Polychrome for years in Pasadena, and they brought me in as a developer on a project. And I don't know, when you see Brocia in your mailbox after 14 hours of coding and you're a little delirious, you just start fumbling off words. And so I started calling him Rochambeau.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know that. I didn't know that story at all.
Yeah, it was back. That was probably 2001 or so. It was a long time ago. But yeah, we should get together. Tell Buchelman to send a bottle of whiskey to some geo coordinates, and we can all meet up.
That sounds good. Well, thanks again, Mike. Have a good weekend, and let's chat soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Anthony.
Thanks for tuning in to the Hustle Podcast. We'll see you next time. Hustle is made by Fundsize, a digital design agency that works with inspiring product teams around the world. Learn more about us at fundsize.co. This season of Hustle is brought to you by Design Inc., the best place to find creative talent and receive free proposals for your project. Go to designinc.com/hustle and get started today. If you're a designer and you'd like to join, you can apply at designinc.com/apply. Also, thanks to Graveyard Teeth for the music and Black River Audio for mixing the show.